Hi, this is John Schaefer. You're listening to WNYC On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads available when you want at WNYC.org and iTunes.
WNYC is supported by the Metropolitan Museum, presenting concerts, curator talks, and lectures with Patti Smith, Tango, Sharon Isbin, Christine Ebersole, and others. 212-570-3949 or metmuseum.org/tickets.
You say you want a revolution.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It is the quintessential debate in rock history. Which band is the greatest ever? Is it these four young lads from Liverpool, or is it rock's prototypical bad boys? It's the ambitious songwriters who pioneered the recording studio versus the electrifying stage performers who perfected the strut and the sneer. It's about musicianship, influence, and attitude. It's the Beatles and the Rolling Stones in this week's
Soundcheck Smackdown.
Joining us in the Beatles corner is Tim Riley, NPR critic and author of several books, including Tell Me Why, The Beatles Album by Album, Song by Song, The 60s and After. Tim, nice to talk to you again. Tim's with us on the line. Joining us here in the studio in the Stones corner is Bill German, author of the memoir Under Their Thumb, How a Nice Boy from Brooklyn Got Mixed Up with the Rolling Stones and Lived to Tell About It. Bill, welcome.
Thanks for having me, John.
Tim, I'm going to start with you, and I want to be careful how I phrase this question, because if I ask you who's the greatest band, that's a different thing from asking who's the greatest rock band. Who's the greatest rock band, Tim?
Well, I argue that the Beatles are a really great rock band, even though one of the things we admire about the Beatles is that they have great range and they do a lot of great pop material, too. Some critics feel that just because they do pop material and they have this expansive reach and a very expansive idea of rock history, that disqualifies them from being a rock and roll band. And I don't happen to share that that idea.
Okay, so you're going to let me sort of, you know, play around with semantics, and you're still going to give me the Beatles as an answer. Bill, what about you?
Well, I mean, if rock and roll is about rebellion, you know, which it was from day one, Jerry Lee Lewis, Great Balls of Fire, all that stuff, you know, then we're talking about the Stones. And the Stones brought a sexuality and a danger that the Beatles didn't. As good as the Beatles' songwriting may have been, it wasn't as dangerous or sexual as the Stones.
But was the Stone songwriting as good as Lennon and McCartney's?
I think at times it was, maybe not in the earliest days. Obviously, you know, Jagger and Richards didn't write pretty much on their first couple of albums, mm-hmm. you know. So, the first couple of albums in terms of writing, you have to give it to the Beatles because the Stones weren't really trying. They were a cover band, you know, both live and in the studio. But the Stones get a lot of credit for that, too, being a cover band, because what they did was preserve black American music and mm-hmm. even white American music later on when they took on country and even reggae. But black American music, they preserve that for us.
Tim, you talk about the Stones suffering from what you call, quote, anxiety of influence, unquote. What is that?
Well, I think the Beatles, just discounting the fact that the Beatles had a couple early laps on the Stones, and actually there's a lot of speculation about how George Harrison actually brings the Stones to Decca. And one of the great ironies of this whole story, this whole argument, is that Andrew Lou Goldham, actually, the manager and
the producer
of the Stones, mm-hmm. He actually did some work for Brian Epstein and the Beatles early on, and his memoirs of the 60s, two volumes, one is called Stoned, one is called Too Stoned. In my book, they rate as like the best memoirs of the 60s that we have, and he has a lot of great detail and stories in there about the rivalry, and it comes from the Stones camp. So I just love that, and I love that he worked for Epstein. He tells a famous story of the Beatles stopping after getting an award one day in London, and they happened to chance upon Lou Goldham in the street, and they hop over to a Stones session, and they write a song for them right in front of them.
The Beatles write a song for the Stones, right there.
They write a song for the Stones. They're stuck, and Andrew Lou Oldham says, I don't know what to do with this session. We're kind of stuck. I don't have any material. We need a follow-up single. And the Lennon and McCartney come in and say, oh, I think we have something for you. And they dash off, I want to be your man. They finish writing it right in the studio, right in front of the Stones. And this is a very impressive, audacious, creative act. And the Stones kind of get the idea, hey, maybe we could write. So that's a very important piece of the legend. And, of course, the Stones do use that as their follow-up single, our second single, and then the Beatles record it later and give it to Ringo to sing.
Right.
So we have an example of the Lennon and McCartney actually writing a song for the Stones and then doing it themselves, and it makes a very good comparison of their early approach to the style.
Well, let's do just that. Let's compare and contrast the Beatles and the Stones.
I want to be your man. I want to be your man. I want to be your man.
Same song, the two bands recorded it. The Stones first, the Beatles wrote it for them, and then the Beatles recorded it just a few weeks later. I Want to Be Your Man, we heard the Beatles version first, featuring Ringo actually singing, and then the Stones version. Tim Riley in the Beatles camp telling us, you know, this is an example of, you know, sort of the Beatles leading the way for the Stones. Bill German in the Stones corner. You might want to just compare the two performances.
Well, great composition, so good work, Lennon and McCartney. But you can hear the danger in the Stones. I mean, no doubt about it. You know, and Tim was just talking about, you know, the Stones getting a record deal with Decca. And, you know, the Stones had been turned down by a lot of record companies because they thought that Mick sounded too black. And they thought he was black, and they thought the Stones were a black band, you know, and so that was one of the things that hindered the Stones early on.
Let's also get some of our Soundcheck listeners who are eager to take part in this debate. We already have dozens and dozens of comments on the Soundcheck page at wnyc.org/soundcheck, and you can add your comment there, or you can call us 212-433-WNYC. It's the mother of all Smackdowns. Which is the greatest band, the Beatles or the Stones? 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the mechanics of the band itself. I mean, let's compare Mick Jagger to the sort of harmonized vocals of the Beatles. Tim, you know, is there any one Beatle who could sort of hold a crowd the way Mick Jagger could?
Well, you know, it's sort of the genius of the Beatles is that they have two lead singers, two frontmen. So that's part of the genius of George Martin, too, is realizing that what he had in the Beatles was different than everything that had come before, that there was no need to actually choose between them. Both of these guys, fantastic singers, great lead singers. Both of them, I think, better singers than Jagger, although Jagger, you might be able to argue that he was the better frontman because he was better at holding a crowd, as you say. But I think this idea that Jagger, I mean, I think it's just hilarious that Jagger tries to sing that Lennon and McCartney song with black styling. I mean, that just is so funny to me. He's so invested in sounding black. And this is something that is a huge separator between the two bands. Neither Lennon nor McCartney had any inclination at all in trying to sound black. And so that's a big differentiator between the two bands.
Bill, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, no, you know... Mick loved all those old blues guys, and so, you know, he brought it to bear on everything that they released. And as far as being a front man, you know, he copied James Brown. You know, there's a funny story, I don't know if it really took place, where Dylan approaches Jagger and says to him, hey, you know, I could have written Satisfaction. And Mick says back to him, yeah, but you couldn't sing it, you know. And that's the point, is that there was that danger and that sexuality that, you know, Mick Jagger just brings, whether he wants to or not, he just does. And that's what the Stones brought. And, you know, just that that danger, that specter of danger.
And that kind of sexuality, that sense of danger, is one of the threads running through some of the comments that are coming in. Susie from the Bronx writes, as a female music fanatic, it's as simple as this. The Stones and their music were edgy and sexy. The Beatles were not. But Elise writes, the Stones were the kind of band you think are sexy when you're between 16 and 21 and want a quickie with no strings attached. Might be fun in the moment, but you don't care if it lasts, and you certainly don't want to date that dude. The Beatles were the kind of band you want to spend a lifetime having great sex with. So, getting close to the too much information aspect there in some of the comments, but, you know, people feel really strongly about this. What about the guitarists? You got, you know, George and John, and, you know, Paul was pretty adept at all of the instruments on the one side. Keith, Brian Jones, Mick Taylor, great guitarist. I mean, you know, do you give an edge to one or the other here, Tim?
Oh, yeah. No, I would be willing to concede quite readily that the Stones have it all over the Beatles in the guitar department, and I will get a lot of hate mail from Harrison fans for saying that, but I think Jones, you know, I think Jones is one of the purest, most natural guitar players in the rock scene, and his early guitar solos, you know, as early as you want to get, tend to, for me, outclass Harrison solos. Harrison solos early on are more appealing for their lack of grace and for their kind of humility and for their sense of eagerness and naivete, and that I actually tend to prefer that over a lot of what the Stones do with their guitars, which is they hire gunslingers, they hire guys who come in and shoot up the town real good, and and you know, that's the beginning and the end of it, and I really admire Harrison's he shows us his effort a lot more.
What about Bill, producers? I mean, would you concede in the George Martin versus Andrew Luge Oldham part of the debate?
Yeah. In fact, I think Andrew would even admit that, too. I mean, Andrew knew nothing about music. He'll admit that, you know. He didn't know anything about a recording studio, but he didn't know how to read music. And I'm told that one of the ways he would, you know, recommend certain musical arrangements is just by singing them or humming them. He couldn't write them out or anything. So Andrew would admit that. I mean, George Martin, you know, wow, there's he has no peers.
We are debating this week the Beatles and the Stones with Tim Riley on the line in the Beatles camp, and Tim German here in the studio with me defending the honor of the Rolling Stones. The fact is, for a long time, the bands were friendly, right, Tim? I mean, it wasn't just that the Beatles wrote that song, I Want to Be Your Man, for the Stones, but, you know, they would occasionally pop up on each other's songs or films and things like that.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the Beatles invited the Stones to take part in sessions. They were at the, I think they were at the Day in the Life session. I think they were at the All You Need Is Love session.
Right.
And that happened much more than the Stones inviting the Beatles along into their sessions.
Although that happened, too, with We Love You, where Lennon and McCartney are in the chorus.
That's right.
So In the interest of fair play and of showing, displaying fair play on the part of these two bands, here are the Beatles with All You Need Is Love, Mick Jagger present at the live filming and the recording session, and then the Rolling Stones, We Love You, with Lennon and McCartney returning the favor. Stones, We Love You, backing vocals by Lennon and McCartney, and Mick Jagger of the Stones was there when the Beatles did All You Need Is Love. So, you know, if there was a rivalry at the time, and there certainly was, it was at least a friendly one. We're hoping things are not quite so friendly out there in SmackDown land. Our phone number, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Let us know which side of the great debate you're on. Max is joining us on the line from Staten Island. Max, welcome.
Hi, guys. Great show. Before my comment about the Beatles and Stones, I just want to say quickly, it will be interesting to do another SmackDown and add The Who to the mix. And I think The Who has a distinction of Townsend being, you know, the main writer, where all these Led Zeppelin, the Beatles, and the Stones all had team writers.
Right. You know, it's interesting, Max, because there are two bands that people have been commenting on. You know, they've been taking advantage of the Beatles versus Stones thing to mention two bands in particular. One is The Who, and the other
is Kinks.
The Kinks, yes. Very good.
You can make a good case for the Kinks, too, especially since, you know, they were really hurt since they weren't allowed in America for 3 years in the 60s.
Okay, but Max, we're talking Beatles and Stones. Give me an answer.
Beatles and Stones, I think it's important to take into account, obviously, how long the bands were together.
Mm-hmm.
They both made amazing music, but you have to give it to the Beatles a little bit in terms of how lean the albums were. I mean, the Stones have been together for 40 years, and, you know, a lot of the later albums are not very good. A lot of the stuff in the mid-70s is not very good. Goat's Head Soup and the It's Only
Black
Rock and Roll album. There's a lot of fat on the 70s and 80s and 90s Stone stuff. So I think it might be interesting if you just focus on the from 64 to 70 when they were, you know, both together at the same time. That might be an interesting comparison. Although the Stones, great things with disco and everything later that obviously the Beatles never got to do.
Bill German is chomping at the bit here. He's practically spitting.
No,
so while
no,
I go and look for a napkin, you go.
No, that's an excellent point. And, you know, and the thing is, you know, that works both for and against the Beatles, that they only lasted 7 or 8 years. Let's say the Beatles did last 50 years. You know, they would have released some clunkers, too, I'm sure, somewhere in the 70s or 80s.
Stones hurt by the Night of the Zombies appearance of an aging Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and Charlie Watts up there on stage night after night?
No, I mean, they want to take rock and roll to a place it's never been before. And if you look at the people that influenced them, the blues people, they're still playing. You know, Chuck Berry's like 83 years old. He's still playing.
Yep.
You know, Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf, these guys pretty much almost literally died on stage, you know. And I think that's where the Stones want to take this, to their credit.
All right, let's head into the control room where Daoud Tyler Amin is monitoring some of the many, many comments, some of them quite colorful. What you got, Daoud?
John, this is a big, big topic, and it sounds like our listeners are trying to really define the terms of the debate. Our listener Brian says, the Stones only achieved success in the U.S. by following in the Beatles' wake. If there had been no Stones, the Beatles still would have been a huge phenomenon. But if there had been no Beatles, most likely the Stones would have been no more than a local success. Virginia from Putnam Valley thinks it's more a question of musicianship. She says the Beatles brought magic, mysticism, and lyricism to a time that was ripe for it and needed it. But as enduring musicians and masters of their talent, the Stones have it hands down. And finally, Frank from Newark, New Jersey thinks it's just a question of what mood you're in. He says, when I want to rock out, I put on the Stones. The Beatles are head music.
Tim Riley, that sort of goes to the way I first posed this question to you, that last comment, the idea that, you know, the Stones are the quintessential rock band and that the Beatles are something else.
Yeah, I don't know. I look at it differently. I mean, I think these comments are all very apt in a certain way. I would take the ideas further. I think it's very interesting to see the different narrative arcs that these bands have, the Beatles peaking, say, between 65 and 66 with trio of albums, Rubber Soul, Revolver, and Sgt. Pepper, and declining after that. The Stones peaking between, say, A Beggar's Banquet and Exile between 68 and 72, and so having a later peak and in some ways kind of richer, more material, and, you know, what I admire about it is that they were very friendly rivals, and they were so different. They did occupy different galaxies of aesthetics. And so you can point to different places where they influenced one another and said, well, certainly We Love You is certainly, you know, based on, if not a spinoff of All You Need Is Love. But what the Stones were better at doing was saying, we have a whole different world we want to explore here. We're not interested in covering the Beatles' turf. We do our own thing.
Let's go to the phones and Michael joining us from New Jersey. Michael, which side of the debate are you on?
Oh, I think it's a bit of apples and oranges, to tell you the truth. I do think the Stones are a great bar band, party band, you know, Jumpin' Jack Flash and Brown Sugar, great songs in that vein. But it diminished me. They were diminished in my eyes to see them kind of copycatting production values of the Beatles, especially psychedelic elements. The Beatles used a sitar, suddenly had to have an album of satanic majesty and sitars. And that always kind of colored my view of the Stones.
Bill, that is something that I've heard over the years, is that the Beatles would do something and then the Stones, you know, the next album would do almost the same thing.
Right. But, you know, listen, Paul McCartney will be the first person to say that Sgt. Pepper was inspired by the Beach Boys' Pet Sounds. So, you know, I think it was an era of experimentation. And it was just the zeitgeist. There was just a lot of ideas floating around. You know, there were plenty of people being experimental at that time. Jimi Hendrix, you know, just tons of bands. You know, if Sgt. Pepper came out 2 months before Satanic Majesties, you know, what could I tell you?
But can I tell you how many people think that Let It Bleed was somehow a takeoff on the Beatles' Let It Be, even though Let It Bleed came out first? I mean, that just seems to be that came to be kind of that was the narrative that people knew.
Right. Well, I think that's also just part of, it's the narrative. You know, it's like the bad boys against the good boys, I guess. You know, when the Beatles were singing their number two song, according to Rolling Stone, I Want to Hold Your Hand, the Stones were singing Muddy Waters, I Just Want to Make Love to You.
Right.
You know, and so they set up that difference early on.
And Tim, it's the 40th anniversary of Let It Be this year. In another 40 years, do you think there will be any currency to the good boys versus bad boys argument?
Well, yeah, I think we'll always those are the two camps that they occupy, and we'll always. The point I would make as the defender of the Beatles' magic here is that the Stones define themselves in relation to the Beatles. The Beatles famously said, you know, that one critic famously said the Beatles occupied the center, they defined the center, and the Stones figured out they could go left of center and create a new zone, and that's what they did. And I think one of the larger ideas that we'll take away in 50 years is that the Beatles were the ultimate recording band, the Stones were the ultimate live band.
That's a good way to leave it. Tim Riley's been with us on the line, the NPR critic and author of numerous books, among them Tell Me Why, The Beatles, album by album, song by song, the 60s and after. Bill German's been with me here in the studio, author of the memoir Under Their Thumb, How a Nice Boy from Brooklyn Got Mixed Up with the Rolling Stones and Lived to Tell About It. Tim, Bill, and everyone who commented and called, thank you for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Coming up next, the two-man gentleman band turn their backs on rock and roll in favor of jazz, swing, and vaudeville. They'll play live for us next on Soundcheck.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
Which is the best rock band, wrote a reader to Parade magazine, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones? To my shock, their answer was the Stones. After all, they were still around and the Beatles had broken up. But the answer went on, the Stones' music was harder rocking, louder, and openly druggier. This last part was a little confusing to my 11-year-old self, but hey, the thing was, the Stones ruled.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out our other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This free service is made possible by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.